All right, one of the questions that we might ask about the little deal we asked about earlier about when's the last time we got frustrated with somebody dear to us and when we were stressed and trying to do something good. And the next part of the question would be whether it would make a difference in that situation if we consciously remembered or consciously considered Jesus' presence in that circumstance. Here is the awkward setting that you find in our reading today, and that is you have a sister a little ruffled with the other sister, but Jesus is sitting there. Now, what do you do? What do you do in that situation when you're kind of boiling on the inside a little bit, but Jesus is sitting there? I mean, it's not like you can go give the other person a piece of your mind then, you see. That's sort of the situation. So let's read Luke 10, verses 38 to the end of the chapter. Luke 10, verse 38 to the end of the chapter. Brian, you mind to read this one for us?
And it came to pass as they went that he entered into a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha received him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, which also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. But Martha was cumbered about much serving, and came to him and said, Lord, dost thou not care that my sister hath left me to serve alone? Bid her therefore that she help me. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art careful and troubled about many things. But one thing is needful, and Mary hath chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her.
All right, now let's work our way through the text a little bit and think about what we're told here. The first place, it's mentioned in verse 38 that this house is in a certain village. We're told that it's Martha's house that Jesus enters into. It's into her house, verse 38 says. But what are the other details about this village, this house's location that we have from the passages in John? I've noted there, John 11, 1 and 18, and chapter 12, verse 1.
It's in Bethany.
All right, it's in Bethany. I believe you note. What else?
Near Jerusalem.
All right, it's near Jerusalem, about 2 miles from Jerusalem, and it's out east from the temple area. You go up over the Mount of Olives, and on the east slope of that hill is the village of Bethany. If you think about it, as a crow flies, it'd be like from here to Evangel University. That's about how far away from Jerusalem it would be, and it would be a walking type of a journey, of course. This is the village. Besides Capernaum, this is the village that is most mentioned by name in the gospel records, I think, largely because of this house that we're reading about today. And what else are we told about it from John 12 and verse 1? All right, she had a brother named Lazarus, and he was often in this house too. I think we'll learn later on. Now, there is another episode that happens in a house where Martha was serving that we will study later on. I don't know if this house is the same house as that other one or not, which is said to be the home of Simon, who had been a leper. We'll talk about that later on, but at least this is said to be Martha's house. That may indicate that Martha was a widow. It may indicate her husband was not a believer, but that he was still alive. I don't know about what all it would tell us, but Martha is a key factor here. Now, according to John 11 and verse 5, how did Jesus feel about both of the women who are mentioned here? All right, he loved them. And he loved their brother, who was a dear friend of his. And so we are not to assume from what we're about to read that one of these ladies had more admiration and affection and loyalty to Jesus than the other one did. We're not to think here that Mary was the Lord's favorite and that Martha was of less interest to him. No, that would be a misreading of the situation. These are both people whom he loves and I think who love him. And you'll see that as we go along. Now, I'm interested for a minute in our thinking about how the personalities of people, maybe temperament would be a better word, but how that can affect their interaction when you put Jesus in a room with them or when you put serving him in a room with them. So let's read the passages that I've noted here, and then when we've read all four of the verses, we'll think about what light they may shed on the personalities of these two women. Just in general, of course, we'll draw some conclusions about it. Jan, read the passages from John 11, if you will, verse 2, 20, and 27, and 28, and then in chapter 12, verse 2. Okay.
Okay, 11, 2. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Verse 20. Martha, therefore, when she heard that Jesus was coming, went to meet him, but Mary still sat in the house. She said to him...
All right, now the she is Martha here. Everybody be aware of that.
She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, even he who comes into the world." And when she had said this, she went away and called Mary her sister, saying secretly, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." 12:2. So they made him a supper there, and Martha was serving, but Lazarus was one of those reclining at the table with him.
And I might should have put 3, where Mary takes the... This is what was referred to in chapter 11 and verse 2, where she takes the expensive ointment and anointed the feet of Jesus and wipes them with her hair. All right, now, just looking at all those together, what in general would you say about the personalities of these two, okay?
I think that Martha's the older.
All right.
One she's mentioned first, and she's kind of got that sister complex where my little sister gets to get away with this, and I got to work.
All right, you call that a sister complex? I don't know. A lot of us guys have sister complexes, too. I think that's a human complex. I see what you're saying, Martha. Now, it's very likely, in my view, that she's the oldest as well because she's mentioned first. But when you're talking about the sister complex, you mentioned something else about her temperament that kind of shows through here. It had to do with her working. What do you notice about her?
She's a practical woman.
All right, she is doing what needs to be done. All right, in each of these cases here, she is she's busy. If you notice, she is serving. She is the one who gets up and takes action. If you notice that, without somebody telling her to, Larry.
She owns deed to her house.
All right, she. I don't know if she had a deed to her house, but it is said to be her house. That's interesting. What about Mary? Nobody's mentioned her yet.
She sits in the shadows.
All right. She is the one who maybe waits to take action. But you find her...
She seems to be very emotional.
She seems to be a little more emotional in how it comes out.
But she did help me. Martha, because it
says they made supper. All right, they made supper. She helped ahead of time. We'll say it that way. What else?
Well, she did with the expensive perfume.
All right. Now, yeah. That's something I want to talk about for a minute. Mary is the one who does things out of devotion that don't seem to be so practically sensible. All right, now, What happened when Jesus, and we didn't read this part of it, but when Mary poured that expensive ointment on his feet, what started to happen among the disciples?
Started to think
All right, they started complaining this was a waste, they being Judas especially. This was a waste. This much could have done so much for the poor. Of course, John says he said that because he carried the money bag. But anyway, Mary didn't look as practical. Now, did all of you notice Martha's faith? Martha, the confession Peter made at Caesarea Philippi is the one that gets the attention. But in John 11:27, look at what Martha said while her brother was laying in the tomb where he'd been for 4 days. All right, she says, "I believe you're the Christ, the Son of God." And we forget sometimes the faith, the remarkable faith that Martha had. Mary appears to be the quieter one. Martha appears to be the one who gets up and takes the lead. But both of them, in their own ways, are people of great devotion to the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's what we want to see. Now, contrast in the passage that we read from Luke 10 now, the verbs here, the two actions that are mentioned in verses 38 and 39. What does it say that Martha did?
She welcomed him.
What in your view is included in that?
She didn't ask for anything. She just was glad he was there.
All right. Maybe she would have shown him the hospitality. She would have been the one who Jan mentioned, the washing of the feet, the anointing with oil, the making him at home, that kind of thing. What did Mary do? She sat at his feet. All right, and listen to what he had to say. And those two verbs lay the background a little bit for the problem that begins to develop. Now, I've asked on the paper what the following verses shed, what light they shed on what Mary was doing here, lest we think that her just sitting down was a passive deed, an irresponsible deed, where she just ignored what needed to be done and let Martha do it, so to speak. I think there's something more than that at work in what happens here. And so I've given us some verses. I'd like one of us to get John Hewlett, if you'll get the passages in Luke 8 and Acts 22. Michelle, get Psalm 27 and 4. Eddie, if you don't mind, get Psalm 73 and 26. And I could have chosen some others, but this will give you an idea of what I'm getting at. Mary is doing something here beyond just sitting, is what I'm getting at. All right, first off, now from Luke 8, this is after the man is put in his right mind, but what's he do here?
Then people went out to see what had happened, and they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had gone, sitting at the feet of Jesus, clothed in his right mind, and they were afraid.
All right, now, we're interested in the sitting at the feet of Jesus part, which is what Mary is doing now. What does that mean? Look at Acts 22 and verse 3 now.
I am a Jew, born in Tarsus in Sicily, and but brought up in this city, educated at the feet of Gamaliel, according to the strict manner of law of our fathers, and being zealous for God, as all of you are.
All right, now, look at that. Educated where? At the feet of Gamaliel. So, when someone took the position of sitting at another's feet in the New Testament world, what did that mean?
Consider that a position of learning.
All right, this is a learner. What would be another word for that?
Student.
Disciple. All right, this is Paul was a disciple of Gamaliel, or Saul of Tarsus was. This man in his right mind is now in the position of the disciple of Jesus, learning from him. And that is the place that Mary puts herself in. Martha is treating Jesus at this point like a guest in her house, Mary is treating Jesus like the teacher and herself as the disciple. Now, there is a choice implied in this that the Lord will come in on later. Michelle, what does the verse in Psalm 27 say?
One thing I have desired of the Lord that I will seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to hold the beauty of the Lord and to inquire in his temple.
All right, I chose that because of the one thing part. One, I want to be in the Lord's house. I want to behold him. That's the thing that I've chosen. That's what the psalmist said. Now, he's talking about being in the temple. He's talking about listening to Jesus. But that one thing, when you got a whole bunch of things calling for your attention, one of them, at times, has to be the most important. And that's the idea with Mary. Psalm 73, 26.
My flesh and my heart fail. My God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever.
All right, that idea, my portion forever. Everything else fails. God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. That's that thought of my portion is the one that Jesus picks up on later on here. And the portion is the inheritance. It is the what you choose for your good part, like a part of the land and so forth. Now, kind of bear that in mind while we study. Now, there are three terms used here about Mary's or Martha's manner as she worked. Pay close attention to these three terms. What's the term in verse 40?
Distracted.
All right, distracted. What is that in some of the other versions? Brian, what was that word?
Cumbered.
What picture does that communicate to you?
Getting tired.
All right, you got things on your mind. You got, we use the word stressed. I think it's that way. You kind of got one eye on your guest and your mind and the other eye and all of your energy focused on the chores that have to be done and getting everything just right and so forth. So distracted, the divided attention. That's the idea of the word here. Lance, thanks for your word. All right, what's the word? The next word in verse 41.
Worried.
Anxious. What?
Anxious.
I'm going to use the word anxious. I think that's the closest one. It talks about being full of cares.
Maybe an oversense of responsibility.
Yeah, an oversense of responsibility or too much like it all depends. I got to pull this off just right. Okay. This can't wait, that type of idea. And what's the other word, verse 41?
Upset,
troubled,
bothered.
All right, those three terms put together all now describe somebody's state of mind or someone's manner in doing the, in this case, Martha's manner in doing the work that she has to do. Now, you have another person, on the other hand, who has a mind on, this is sitting at the feet, that caused to my mind at least a sense of undivided attention, the idea of waiting before someone, having chosen one thing, and regarding that as my portion. While the other person is trying to figure out how to provide enough portions so that other people can focus on one thing and sit at someone's feet. All right, Debbie?
I don't know if I'm getting ahead of you. It's worse than I think there is a good lesson for us there, too.
I think there is, too. And I think it's a...
distracted, anxious, and troubled type things that really don't matter.
All right, all right. That's kind of where we're headed with this. Let's kind of think about how to get there. I've asked on the paper about some verses that are more than we'll have time to read. So I'd like to for us to read some of them. Russ, would you get Luke 8, verse 14? This is in the parable of the sower. John Ewing, would you please get Luke 12? And I'm going to ask you to start at verse 22 and just have you to read about 20 down through about 25. And then Luke 21 and verse 34. Randy, would you get that one for us? All right, now think about these. All these have something to do. I chose the middle term here with being anxious and letting that define our manner of action in our lives. All right, think about this. This is from the parable of the sower. Russ?
The seed that fell among the thorns stand for those who hear, but as they go on their way, they are choked by life's worries, riches, and pleasures, and they do not mature.
All right. Now, the problem is that anxiety can, well, this is the question I'm asking you. How might this passage, this point, have helped in this situation?
Around there. Right.
Here is the teacher in your house, and you're letting what he says be choked out by the cares, the immediate cares that you have right then. All right? Look at these statements from Luke 12 now. I wish we could read this whole text here, but go ahead, John.
And he said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on."
All right, now what's Mary apparently most anxious about right here? What's everybody going to eat for dinner? We don't know that for sure if that's all of it, but it's got to be a big part of it. Okay, John?
"For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens, they neither sow nor reap, they have neither storehouse nor barn, and yet God feeds them. And how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life?"
Go ahead, John, down through 27, please.
"Okay. If then you are not able to do as small a thing as that, why are you anxious about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow, they neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these."
All right, now the toiling and spinning that's mentioned there is the problem in the situation here. I heard that read one time in a discussion about Mary and Martha, and somebody in the class said, "That sounds like that must have been said by somebody who's sitting at the table." Well, what do you think about that? There are practical things that have to be tended to in life, aren't there? The question is how to set proper priorities, how to keep the stress from getting the best of us, and how to keep the main thing, Ryan?
Well, I just happen to be married into one of these families. Samantha's dad's from Jordan. That's where he was born and raised. And so all of her uncles and aunts, they're all from that area. And you don't enter their house without them offering tea and cookies or something. And we went to her uncle's house. He had just moved in. And we went to, that very day, everything was in boxes, but it didn't stop them from, "You sit here on these boxes, and we'll open some boxes up and find some tea, and we'll make tea," because you just don't do that.
Oh, that's
and
good.
So that this doesn't surprise me that she would act in this manner, because that festival hasn't changed.
So in their culture, hospitality is a much more urgent thing than just come in and have a seat and make yourself at home.
Exactly. Right. And you know, that still applies because, we get distracted and we think these things are so important.
Yeah.
That we forget.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay, Russ?
I kind of wonder if she was making pot roast with peanut butter and jelly.
maybe so, I don't know. But I read that one writer talking about this said, you got to remember that any time a guest like these would have been had, you didn't go take something out of the refrigerator and microwave it. That arrangements would have had to have been made ahead of time, and that you got to bear that in mind when you look at what's happening here. John?
It almost
seems like to me maybe she's kind of more worried about saving face. You know, what are the guests going to think? I'm not a good host if I don't sit and do this? Or
worried about appearances. You
know. Appearances? Well, maybe.
I don't think it's appearances. I think it goes back to that whole hospitality thing. That is what you do. You take care of people.
Okay, Jan, you, or one of you here.
I don't think it was so much what she was doing by doing the things that she was doing, the practical things that needed to be taken care of, but the attitude that she felt towards her sister who wasn't helping her to do this.
I kind of think that's the more the right deal. I saw Larry first and then Brenda here.
I think it's just Martha's wiring. And the three things listed on the left are demons of the multitasker. And she was one of those.
You think it's how she's wired. Okay. Well, that's the reason I brought up the temperament of the two women to start with. I think that plays a role in it, Brenda.
Just a thought about the magnitude of the situation. It probably wasn't just Jesus that was there as a guest. It was probably him plus several of his disciples.
That's a good point. And you put that together with what Brian is saying, you can see the stress. And the point we're getting at is that what may look like a small deal to us is not necessarily a small deal. Eddie?
I think that what Martha did was very important. What Mary did was very important. So Jesus took this opportunity to teach us a lesson.
Yeah. I think what both of them did was very important, and that leads me to the question number 8 here, which you guys have been talking about some. What problem developed here? And this is so human, you can almost see it.
When you are busy,
here's my point.
Amen.
When you are busy, now everybody think about this. This is humorous because it's human, but it's because it's human, it's serious. Think about this now. When you are busy, you start thinking that you are more busy than everybody else. Now you think about what I'm saying. If you listen to us, we work harder than anybody else who has the same job, and we get paid less than other people who are doing the same job. And if we don't say that, that's still how we feel. And the tireder you get, the more stressed you get, the more that feeling comes out. Now, you watch how Martha handles this. What does she do? What do you observe from what Martha said to Jesus here?
Jesus to make her sister help her.
All right. What do you learn from the fact that she went to Jesus and not to Mary?
My first reaction was it's tattletale.
All right. Now there's more than that in this though. What? This is a human thing. Now, if you are a doer,
I want to make sure that Christ seen what she was doing.
All right. Go a little deeper than that though.
He had the authority.
All right, but go deeper than that now. Brenda?
It was almost Jesus' fault that she wasn't doing what she was supposed to do.
All right, maybe there are some people who think that. I think it's even more practical.
You want other people to know how much you're doing, how less other people hurt.
How does it get to the point where your sister is sitting there and you don't say a word to her, you go and say something to him?
Is it the same thing? I'm the only one.
She is listening to him, but second, don't you have to work up your frustration a little bit? You have to go through. This is not the first moment you have felt this. If you bypass the person that you want to do something and have somebody else to tell her to do it, when she's your sister sitting right there, go ahead.
Well. As a practical example, sometimes I could tell
don't name names
do
now.
I could tell the kids to do something. But I'll say to Scott, would you please make these kids, you know, just because.
And how are you feeling when you say that? Okay. That's my point with Martha. She has built up in her mind while she has worked that Mary doesn't care about what she's going through. She has dealt with Mary's motives in her mind while she has been doing this work. And that's how she gets to the place where she says this to Jesus. Now, she says to the Lord, an interesting thing. Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? What's that tell you?
That you don't care about me.
All right. When you get stressed, is it the feeling that happens is that I'm going through all this and nobody cares? In this case, the idea that the frustration of anxiety creates a bit of a sense of jealousy, even, that Jesus cares more about her sister than he does her, and that he's content to let it go along that way. And so she, almost as if to order Jesus, says, tell her to get up and help me. Now, I'm suggesting here that when we get distracted, anxious, and troubled, those are the attitudes that begin to invade in our lives. We grow frustrated, we think no one cares, and we begin to insist on things we don't have the right to insist of someone else. Tell him or her to do this or that. Did the bell ring? Okay. I'm frustrated we didn't get to the main points here. Pardon?
Both bells.
Both bells?
Yeah.
All right. This is something we'll try to finish the end of this one next week. It's an important part of the study. Thank you guys for being with us. Have a great week.